Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Over the past couple of weeks, we've been finding out more about some of the European leaders who have dominated headlines in recent times, from the Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni to the French President Emmanuel Macron. Well, today, it's the last in the series, and we're looking at the career of a man who has served as the President of the European Council and leader of the European People's Party, Donald Tusk, who is currently the Prime Minister of Poland. And we're joined by Graeme Finley from the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD to tell us more about him. Good morning, Graeme.
Good morning.
To have you back with us again. Now, we were discussing the Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban last week. Donald Tusk is seen as the complete opposite of Orban, isn't he?
Which is funny. I mean, there was a huge sigh of relief all across Europe and certainly in the European Union bodies when Donald Tusk defeated the Law and Justice Party and became Prime Minister of Poland for the third time in 2023, because he had been sort of running mass demonstrations against the serious erosion of democracy and the rule of law in Poland by the very conservative, socially conservative Law and Justice Party, who worked with Orban at the European level to really frustrate any attempts to try and halt this democratic backsliding. It's a bit interesting because when Orban first started making his constitutional changes, Tusk was relatively supportive. They were both in the European People's Party at the time. But he has quickly realized that his political opponents really are going to try and dismantle whatever media independence or again, the role of the constitutional judges of Poland. And so he has been seen, I think, in European capitals as the savior of Europe from this real crisis which is developing on the east. Now, of course, Slovakia immediately became the next Poland in terms of twinning with Hungary to sort of block a lot of reforms. But he's under a lot of pressure now, though, to be much more conservative in his own politics, just because of the difficulties in Eastern Europe right now.
Well, we'll talk about that and how he's handling it all in a moment. But just give us a sense of who he is, what his background is, how he came to politics and so on.
Yeah, I mean, he's been around, it seems like, forever.
Yes.
Right? You know, he was a student activist in Solidarity, the anti-communist social movement in Poland in the 80s. And then with the fall of communism, he immediately founds a few center-right liberal parties and gets elected. And, you know, has really stayed in that European People's Party space the whole time. But he's always been very pro democracy and the rule of law, having experienced communism, the separation of church and state, which is not the case with Law and Justice, and very pro-Europe. And so since Poland's accession to Europe, he failed to become president of Poland, but he then was elected twice as prime minister.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he rose through the ranks in Europe as well, very significantly before this current term as prime minister.
Yeah, he resigns to become president of the European Council. And I think probably most of us might remember Donald Tusk as president of the council in ways that we don't remember Herman Van Rompuy, for example. And that's because Tusk, even though they thought his English wasn't very good and his French was non-existent, was quite an outspoken president of the European Council. You know, this is an interesting body which sort of guides and steers activity in the European Union, even as it doesn't do the day-to-day executive work of the European Union. And he, for example, when Donald Trump was elected in 2016, called out the threat which a Trump presidency posed to Europe in ways which are now kind of coming around to bite him.
Mm-hmm. So he is persona non grata in the White House, for example, now, and his opposite is invited rather than him for almost for official visits.
It is really a bit of a crazy time. So, yes, recently, there's been a recent presidential election, which Tusk's party narrowly lost to Karol Nawrocki, who's now just recently installed as the president of Poland. And the president of Poland can veto legislation, and Tusk doesn't have the votes to override that veto. But, I mean, Nawrocki is just in the job, but he's a very vocal Trump supporter. Trump had him in the White House even before, during the election, basically. And yes, Tusk was not invited to the teleconference about Ukraine. And Trump made it clear at the last minute that he preferred Nawrocki. Now, Nawrocki doesn't control foreign policy. He's the president, he's the head of state, but he's not the government. And Just recently, Nawrocki was back in the White House. There were no Polish government representatives on the delegation. And Trump was praising Nawrocki and promised him extra troops in Poland. So he's really treating Nawrocki as if he's his guy in Poland.
So Tusk has gone through his career holding the line on the center, if you like, and that has been his ambition. But it's getting harder and harder for him to do that now because, as you mentioned earlier, he is under real pressure, isn't he, to lean more conservatively.
Yeah, there are a lot of pressures on Tusk. I mean, the Polish economy is doing quite well. It has the second lowest unemployment in Europe. It's an important country. It's the fifth biggest country in terms of population. It's got the fifth or sixth biggest economy, depending on how you measure it. Nevertheless, he's under a lot of pressure from his farmers and from people generally who are starting to worry about the impact of Ukrainian farmers having access to European markets, to the number of Ukrainians in Poland. Poland is the main staging site for all military and humanitarian relief in Ukraine, and especially in terms of migration. So people may not have noticed this because we're not in Schengen, but things are going kind of crazy in Schengen right now. It's really breaking down. Quite a number of countries have applied for temporary reinstatement of border controls to cope with what they call irregular migration. One of these is Poland, which has actually even gone so far as to say it won't process asylum requests from people who enter through Belarus. And because they claim that Belarus is, and Putin are weaponizing migration by driving refugees over the border. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some reason to believe that. But of course, this seems to be in conflict with Poland's obligations. But another country which has brought in border controls is Germany. Friedrich Merz, as part of the campaign and as part of his own attempts to deal with what he calls irregular migration, has set up border controls along the Polish, well, all of Germany's borders, but especially the Polish border. And this has led to very long lineups at the border, which previously you could just drive through. And it's led to some real craziness on the Polish-German border in particular. There are vigilante groups recently who set themselves up and were checking cars, for what they called illegal migrants. And Tusk decried this as taking over the operations of the state, impersonating police officers and things like that. And Nawrocki has praised them. So this is a sort of crisis on the border, which is really leading to a breakdown in just traffic and trade between the
two
countries.
So how then is his relationship with the German chancellor as a result of all of that?
It's not great, it has to be said. It's a funny thing. Tusk, again, has tried to push Europe in a much more defensive position. And in terms of Poland already is the highest military spender in Europe per capita and per as part of its GDP and not per capita. And it's wants the rest of Europe to do more. And to that end, he's actually signed a mutual security treaty with Macron in France, even as he resists Macron's attempts to get European troops into Ukraine. He's revived the Weimar Alliance, which sounds kind of sinister, but is in fact a regional alliance of Germany, France, and Poland. But relations between Germany and Poland are pretty frosty right now. Mm-hmm. And so the Weimar Alliance is not going to be able to do the work he wants.
And this hard line he's taken against immigration, is that a natural state for him, or is that something he has had to do?
I think it's a mixture of both. I think he really represents where a lot of center-right politicians in Europe are, especially members of the European People's Party. They're all under a lot of pressure. This includes Ursula von der Leyen, right? They are naturally socially conservative. They're naturally for the maintenance of a sort of national state, but they're committed to the rule of law. They're committed to human rights. They're committed to, countries working together. They're all the good Europeans in their own minds, working together to address these challenges. But he's getting a lot of populist pressure, both from Law and Justice, but also from much more extreme elements in the country. And again, Poland has taken over a million Ukrainian refugees. They are a huge part of Poland and have been for a long, long time. And there's the usual debates about how much support they should receive, but they have an special edge when you're talking about those kinds of numbers. And the number of Poles who support the long-term keeping of all those Ukrainian refugees in the country has gone down precipitously, and support for reducing benefits has gone up. So on with that end, he's opted out or has refused to join the migration, the EU migration pact. And he's really trying to play both sides and, yes. and to keep his people happy.
Listening to what you've been saying about the various pressures that are on him, it seems like he's trying to strike that balance, and you'd wonder how long he can sustain that for. I mean, what are polls telling us about how much support he has now in his own country?
Yeah, that's a good question. He has, you know, he was quite popular, even though he had an austerity budget in his first term as prime minister. He was reelected, which was the first Polish government to be reelected since Poland stopped being communist. And he only resigned not because he was defeated, but because he wanted to be president of the European Council. He won the election rather handily, or at least his coalition did, in 2023. And he recently had a confidence vote after the failed presidential election, you know, failing to win the presidential election, just to bolster his support. But he did lose the presidential election quite narrowly. But I think in the end, if you look at the polls, it's all to play for. But individual events are what's on people's minds at a current time, like migration crises on the border, can really tip it over in favor of his populist opposition.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder how worried Polish people will be about the fact that Donald Trump isn't a fan.
The Polish people, I think, bemoan the fact that, you know, forget about Trump. At the heart of their society is this conflict between two politicians, which is going to prevent them from doing anything. I mean, when it gets to the point that you have two different voices on the world stage, that's bad. But when the government of the day can't pass legislation, which the president disagrees with, and the president, like his predecessor, has shown every indication that he's prepared to completely veto any legislation like maintaining supports for Ukrainians, which he did recently, you know, that doesn't accord with his beliefs. So I think Poles are most concerned about the dysfunctionality at the heart of their government. Mm-hmm. That said, again, the Polish economy is strong and is incredibly important to the region. And it is finally doing what Tusk promised back in 2007, which is bringing Polish people home, because there's a lot of opportunity there.
And the EU, still big fans of Donald Tusk, you know, that a great defender of the European project. Is that how he's seen, or are they concerned that he's going to have to bend now to the right somewhat?
I think that's a really good question. He, you know, he's someone they know. He has been there in Europe for so long, and he's such a committed European. I think there's a sense that they'll work with him. They know they can work with him. They know that sometimes he's going to do things like opt out of the migration pact, basically because he has to. And they certainly prefer him to law and justice, which they see as just a third blocking agent in Eastern Europe at a time when they really don't need it.
Graham, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you very much. And thank you for bringing us that series on our European leaders, the ones that we are very familiar with. Of course, we'll talk to you again very soon about other matters, no doubt. That's Graham Finlay from the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.